or perhaps smell the stench that lingers about me. But he is too distracted to notice.
Come, I want to show you something,
he says, taking my hand and leading me from the ring to his cabin. It is close to the edge of the fairgrounds, a single, solid room, not much larger than a shed. I stand in the doorway uncertainly, the smell of damp wood and earth mixing with stale smoke. I have not stayed with him since coming to Thiers, because he's been rehearsing so intently, and I haven't wanted to intrude. Will he try to take me in his arms? I do not think I can bear to be close to him right now. Instead, he beckons me past the bed. On the other side stands a new piece of furniture, a low rectangular oak chest, about 5 feet long, almost like an oversized steamer trunk. It's lovely, I say, and run my hand over the wood, admiring the elaborately carved lid. Where did you get it? And why? Peter, with his Spartan and comfortless cabin, is not one for material possessions.
I saw it at the local market and bartered with the woodworker. Don't worry, he smiles. I got a good price.
But it isn't that. The piece is solid and permanent, so impractical and out of place for the circus. What will he do with it when we move on? Peter is not an illogical man, and I wait for the further explanation that will make sense. He opens the lid and runs his hand along the bottom. Then he lifts it up, revealing a secret compartment, maybe a foot deep, just enough for a small person if one laid flat. Oh, I exclaim.
Just in case, he says.
He means for me to hide in it, if the SS or police come again. He watches my face, and I try to control my reaction to the space, suffocating and coffin-like.
We really haven't had a suitable hiding place for you here, so I thought this might do,
he explains, trying to sound matter-of-fact. But his face is grave. Seeing the police try to arrest the man at the show had shaken Peter as well. He knows, as I do, that the Germans or the French police will come again, that we must be ready. He is trying to protect me, but there is something in his eyes, more than concern or even just affection. I had seen that look once before, when Eric and I were first married. I turn away, shaken. I recall then what Noah had said about Peter's feelings for me. I had been so quick to deny it, not wanting to see or believe. When I peer back at his hopeful eyes, though, I know that she was right. How had I not seen it before? Until now, it had been easy to just mark this as a relationship of convenience. Then Noah held a mirror up to my face, and I can ignore it no longer. I think back over the months, Peter constantly by my side, trying to protect me. His feelings were not sudden or new. They had been there all the time. How had Noah, so young and naive, seen everything while I had missed it?
You hate it, he says, running his hand over the chest and sounding disappointed.
Yes, I want to say, though I had vowed after what happened in Darmstadt that I would never hide again. Not exactly, I reply instead, not wanting to hurt his feelings when he meant well. It's perfect, I add too quickly. In truth, it is smaller than the hiding place in Darmstadt. I could scarcely manage it now, much less when my stomach grows larger.
Then what is it? He asks, cupping my chin in his hand and studying my face. You're so pale. Are you ill? Did something happen?
His face creases with concern as he sees through my facade, sensing something wrong. Terror seizes me then, not at my pregnancy or the danger of being caught by the police or even the SS. No, I am petrified of this thing between me and Peter. It started as two people who were lonely, drawn to each other to fill a void, and it was meant to stay that way. But at some point, when I was not paying attention, it had turned into so much more, for me as well as for him. I hesitate. Telling Peter will change everything. But I cannot worry him like this by remaining silent. And there is a part of me that desperately wants to share the news with him. Tell him, a voice more Noah's than mine seems to say inside my head. He loves me, and that will be enough. I take a deep breath, exhale. Peter, I'm pregnant. I hold my breath, waiting for his reaction. He does not answer, but stares at me blankly. Peter, did you hear me? I ask. The walls seem to draw closer, and the air is suffocating. Please, say something.
That's impossible, he says, his voice filled with disbelief.
It's true, I reply weakly. What did he think we had been doing all of those nights in the winter quarters? He stands up and begins to pace, running his hand through his hair.
I mean, it's possible, of course, he continues, as though I had not spoken. Just hard to believe. And with everything that is going on right now, it complicates things.
My heart sinks. Telling him had been a mistake. You don't sound pleased, I say, and my cheeks burn as though I have been slapped. I didn't plan this. I'm sorry to inconvenience you. He sits again and takes my hands.
No, darling, it isn't that at all, he replies,
his face softer now, tone gentle.
Nothing would make me happier.
You mean you want to be a father? I ask, surprised.
No,
he says quickly, and my heart sinks. He does not want this after all.
It's that I already am.
His voice is slow and scratchy, every word hard-fought. I don't understand. The room around me begins to spin, and bile rises in my throat once more. I will myself to take short, shallow breaths. What are you talking about?
I had a child.
Had. His face is more pained than I have ever seen it. Oh, I gasp. I am stunned. I had assumed Peter had a life before me, but a child. Suddenly, it seems I do not know him at all.
I was married to a ballerina from Moscow named Anya, he says, looking away, his voice hollow.
I try to picture his wife, and imagine with more than a little jealousy, someone tall and willowy, with long, graceful limbs. Where is she now?
We had a little girl, Katya.
His voice cracks as he says her name. He tries to continue, moving his lips, but no sound comes out. What happened? I ask, dreading the answer, but at the same time needing to know. He sits mutely for several seconds, unable to go on.
Spanish flu. The best doctors and hospitals couldn't help her.
How old was she?
4.
He buries his head in his hands, his back shaking with silent sobs. I sit helplessly beside him, my mind reeling as I try to process it all. A few minutes later, he lifts his head, wiping his eyes.
I suppose I should have said something sooner, but it's just so hard. Anya died shortly after Katya, he adds. The doctor said it was also flu. I think it was a broken heart. So it was all gone, you see.
His voice catches, and I wonder if he might break down once more. I'm sorry. I throw my arms around him and rest my head against his shoulder. But my sympathy is inadequate, and it is impossible to ease a pain I did not share. I understand so much more about him then, his dark moods and his drinking. This brings painful memories for you, I add. He shakes his head.
No, it is good to remember both of them. But you see why I am nervous.
I understand. He is afraid, I realize, of having another child, loving as deeply as he once had. Then he had had all of the money and privilege in the world, and it had not been enough. How could he possibly protect and care for a child now? It will be fine, I say, forcing conviction into my voice to cover my own doubts. We can do this. Now it is my turn to be strong.
Yes, of course we can, Peter replies, forcing a smile.
He kisses me once, then again. He brings his mouth to my eyelids, lips, cheeks, breasts. His weight pushes me back against the bed, and for a second it seems he will try to take me. But he simply rests his head on my belly, not speaking.
Before you, I had given up hope, he says finally. I don't know what I would do without you. I love you, he adds.
The feelings that he has kept pent up since we've been together seem to bubble forth. And though I once longed for them, I am overwhelmed. It is too much now to carry him and the child. He lifts his head, and a light seems to dawn in his eyes.
We should get married, he declares, taking both of my hands in his own.
Married? The word reverberates in my head. Once it had meant something. Now in my mind, I see the papers Eric had thrust before me, saying that none of it had mattered at all. Hear the clatter of my wedding ring as it fell to the floor of our apartment. Oh, Peter. There was only once for me and marriage. I cannot fathom anyone wanting me in that way, or ever letting myself get that close to a man again.
We can't. No, of course not, he says quickly, unable to mask his disappointment.
I cup his cheek. In my heart, I am already married to you.
Or we could leave, he says.
I am surprised. Peter had always rejected the idea before, because there was nowhere else he could perform as he does here. But now, with the prospect of a child, everything has changed. I can't leave, I reply. Here I can hide, at least for now. Once I might have taken the chance and fled. This is about something bigger than just my own safety now, though. I touch my stomach once more. And Noah needs me.
The girl?
His expression is puzzled.
Why should she matter? I didn't think you even liked her.
No, of course not, but still. It's true, I admit. I disliked Noah from the first, and even more after she had gotten me pulled from the show. But she depends on me, as surely as Theo does her. You could go if you really wanted, I offer. The words hurt to say. He wraps his arms more tightly around me.
I will never leave you, he says, and his hand lowers to my stomach. or our child.
Someone who will not leave me, I think, wishing for my younger self, the one who might have believed it.
It will be all right,
I say, pushing away my doubts.
Better than all right. A family.
I smile through my fears. Can such things possibly be? But my child will be Jewish. An image flashes through my mind of Noah making her way blindly through the woods in the snow with Theo before we found her. We are barely able to protect one Jewish child. How on earth would we ever protect two?
Chapter 14. Noah. No! No! Estrid cries during practice the following Sunday, her voice ringing so shrilly through the big top that one of the jugglers practicing below drops her silver rings to the ground with a clatter. You must go higher! I swing my legs harder as Goethe throws me back toward the bar, trying to heed Estrid's command. But when I make it to the board and look down, her face is still dissatisfied. You must get your legs above your head, she scolds, as I climb down the ladder. But you said not to break the line of my body, so I thought... I begin, then stop, knowing I will not win. Estrid has been ill-tempered these past few days, snapping at everything I say and berating me for the same routines that were just fine a few days earlier. Watching her lips curl with displeasure, I wonder if she is still angry about my part in having her removed from the show. She had seemed to forgive me nearly a week earlier, but now I'm not so sure. What's wrong? I ask. She opens her mouth as if there is something she wants to say. It's nothing, she replies finally. But she does not sound as though she means it. Estrid, please, I press. If there is something, maybe I can help. She smiles, but there is no happiness in her eyes. If only that were true, she says. Then walks away and starts up the ladder. So there is something wrong, I think, knowing better than to press. Are we going to keep rehearsing? I ask instead, dreading the answer. But she shakes her head. We're done for today. She reaches the board and takes the bar, leaps without warning. Though she cannot perform in the show, this has not stopped her from flying, faster and fiercer than ever. She works without a catcher now, barely touching the bar, in a way that seems impossible even as I watch. I walk across the practice hall to Peter, who has stopped training to watch Astrid. We have to stop her, I say. She's going to kill herself. But his eyes are a mix of admiration and futility, and his posture resigned.
I cannot stop her from her greatness, being who she is.
This is not greatness. It is suicide, I retort, surprised that I dare speak so forcefully to him. Peter stares at me oddly.
Estrid would never kill herself. She has too much to live for.
There is an uneasy tone to his voice. Maybe he knows what is bothering Estrid. But before I can ask, he walks away. Taking a last worried look up at Estrid, I pull my wrap skirt and blouse on over my practice leotard. I walk from the big top and start across the fairgrounds. It is late afternoon on Sunday, a little over a week since we arrived in Tears, and I want to feed Theo myself and spend as much time as I can with him before he falls asleep. Close to the tracks, the water truck has pulled up, and people are hurrying to fill their buckets at the back of it. There are endless buckets everywhere at the circus, for washing and drinking and other things. The first time I'd spied two with my name on them, in the row waiting to be filled at Darmstadt, I'd known that I belonged with the circus just a tiny bit more. I fill my buckets, one for washing and one for drinking, and carry them to the train, eager to change and reach Theo. I climb the stairs of the rail car, taking care not to spill. The sleeper car where I expected to find him waking from his nap is empty. Theo is not there. Easy, I tell myself, starting back outside. Sometimes the girls who watch the children take them outside for fresh air. A few children are behind the train, rolling a ball, while the two girls meant to be watching them chat idly. Theo is not with them. Where is he? My heart pounds. Has he been lost? Taken? I start across the backyard to find Astrid again. She will know what to do. Then, in the distance, I hear a giggle. My eyes dart toward the pens where the animals are kept. Theo is near there, in the arms of Elsie, one of the girls who minds him. I relax slightly. But as I start across the grassy field, Elsie walks toward the lion's cage. I see her talking to Theo, pointing as they near one of the animals. The cage here is flimsy, a few metal bars spaced too widely apart, nothing separating Theo from the fierce beast. Elsie is casual and unafraid as she walks Theo right up to the cage. His hand reaches out as if petting a dog.
No!
I cry, my voice lost in the wind. Theo puts his hand through the cage, his fingers just inches from a lion's mouth.
Theo!
I run toward him, feet pounding against hard earth, kicking up bits of grass and dust. I reach Theo and grab him from the girl's arms. The lion, startled by my sudden movement, lunges at the bars with a roar, swiping the very spot where Theo had been. I leap back, tripping and stumbling to the ground. Theo lets out a wail. A sharp rock cuts into my palm as I break my fall, but I hardly notice. I clutch Theo to my chest, shielding him. I breathe hard, not getting up, trying to comfort Theo, who is more upset than I have ever seen him. Another second, and I would have been too late.
Shh,
I soothe, studying Theo. Though his face is red from bawling, he does not seem to be hurt. Then I stand, brush the dirt from my knees.
How could you?
I berate Elsie, whose face is pale.
We were just playing,
she explains, flustered.
I wanted to show him the lion up close. I meant no harm.
But I am still furious.
That animal, he could have killed Theo. And this outfit!
Holding him close, I notice then Theo is dressed in a sequined leotard, too large and hastily pinned to fit.
What on earth is he wearing?
Over her shoulder, I see Astrid coming from the big top. She strides across the field, her face a mix of anger and concern.
What's the commotion? She was holding Theo right up against the lion's cage,
I say, my voice rising as I relive my terror.
He might have been killed.
She takes Theo from me, and he stops crying, but gulps for air as he recovers.
He seems fine. Was he hurt?
No, I admit, swatting at one of the flies that buzz perennially around the animal cages. I had expected her to side with me, even through her anger. How can she not be troubled by what Elsie had done?
But look at his clothes!
Pretty soon he'll start training, she observes mildly. Training? I repeat, puzzled. To perform, she replies. Though we have never discussed Theo joining the act before, Astrid speaks as though it is a given. I stare at her, caught speechless. I had not imagined Theo performing, or thought about a future for him with the circus at all. "He's just a baby," I say. Theo squawks, also seeming to protest. "I was on the trapeze almost before I could walk," Astrid says. "Of course, it was a fixed trapeze." I shudder. In Astrid's world, it is perfectly normal for children to perform. Theo will not learn the trapeze, though, or any other circus act. His life, our life, will be somewhere else. "He's too young," I insist, not mentioning the fact that I will never let him perform at all. Astrid does not respond. She is looking over my shoulder, squinting at something across the field that leads to town. "Someone's coming." I turn and follow her gaze. "Luke," I say aloud, more to myself than Astrid. It has been nearly a week since the night he came to the circus. I thought after that he had given up, or was scared away. I had not expected to see him again. That might have been for the best, I think, as he nears. He is the mayor's son, and, as Astrid had made clear, not to be trusted. "What is he doing here?" she asks, her voice curling with displeasure. "I don't know," I say, suddenly defensive. It is not as if I've done anything to encourage him. My heart lifts in spite of itself, as Luke comes toward us, a small bunch of daffodils clutched in one hand, his black hair lifted by the breeze. "But I'll find out." I look down at Theo, hesitating. I do not want to let him go so soon after finding him in danger, or give him back to Elsie to watch. I hate asking Astrid for anything right now, but I am too curious. "Will you mind Theo for a bit?" I muster, knowing how she will respond. "I'm already your trainer. Now I'm supposed to be your nursemaid, too?" she snaps. I do not answer. She is annoyed, but also she adores Theo, and cannot deny him. "Oh, fine. If I must. Go. Don't be gone long." She takes Theo from my arms and starts back toward the train. I hang back as Luke approaches. "You again," I say, trying to sound offhand. I am suddenly mindful of my hair, hastily pulled back, and my cheeks, too red from the strain of rehearsing. "You keep turning up." Luke hangs back for a second, looking nervously over my shoulder at Astrid as she walks away with Theo.
"I hope it is okay that I've come."
"I suppose," I say matter-of-factly.
"I didn't think you'd want me to,"
he says.
"You didn't meet me after the show. I came as I promised, and I waited to see you after for as long as I could. You never came."
"I couldn't after everything happened with the police," I say. "Besides, we had a curfew. People were watching. I couldn't get out to tell you."
"That's all right,"
he says, forgiving me instantly.
"I brought you these."
He thrusts the flowers at me awkwardly. Sweet fragrance wafts over me as I take them, fingers brushing his. I put one in my hair, and a second one in the top button of my blouse.
"Walk with me?"
Luke starts away, but I stand, feet planted, not following. He turns back.
"You're not coming?"
"Your father," I say. A look of realization comes over his face.
"What about him?"
"He's the mayor. Why didn't you tell me?" I ask.
"Because it didn't come up," he replies uneasily.
"How could it not come up?" I ask. "You're the mayor's son.
You're right, of course, he admits, his voice contrite. I should have said something, and I would have if I'd gotten the chance to meet up with you. I guess I was just hoping that it wouldn't matter. Or maybe because he knew it would matter a lot. Does it? He asks. Matter, I mean. I hesitate, considering. I don't care that his father is the mayor, not in the way that Astrid and the others do. If his father is a Nazi sympathizer, though, then what does that make Luke? He seems too nice to possibly be that way himself. Luke is still watching me with worried eyes, seeming to care very much about my answer. I suppose not, I concede finally. But it would have been better to know. Somehow, it is the not telling that matters more. But I have my own secrets, so who am I to judge anyone on that? No more secrets, I promise. I hold my breath. I can hardly promise the same. But he reaches out his hand. Now can we walk? I look uneasily over my shoulder. I shouldn't go with him, I think. Hearing Astrid's admonition that getting to know Luke could bring danger. And I want to get back to Theo quickly. I'm hardly dressed, I say, feeling the still damp leotard clinging to my skin. Luke smiles. Then we won't go anywhere grand. All right. I relent. Despite my reservations, I'm curious about him, and eager to escape the chaos and intensity of the circus for just a bit. He leads me toward the edge of the woods, the same path Astrid had shown me the day I went into town. I follow him hurriedly from the circus grounds so as not to be seen. I look back over my shoulder in the direction of the train car, imagining Astrid putting Theo to sleep. I do not want to burden her, and I barely had the chance to see Theo at all. I am afraid I only have a few minutes. The others, they don't want me around, do they? He asks. It isn't that. The truth, that they think he somehow brought trouble with him, seems far-fetched and too hurtful to share. They're just a little nervous about outsiders. I suppose everyone is these days. I don't want to cause problems for you, he says. Perhaps I should have stayed away. No, I reply sharply. That is, I can make my own decisions. Then let's go, he says. We continue silently through a break in the trees that forms a small grove. Soon we reach the far side of the forest. We skirt the edge of the stream, this time headed away from the town, which looms behind us, seeming to watch with disapproving eyes. I had wanted to be alone with Luke, but now that it is just the two of us, it is awkward, almost uncomfortable. He stops and sits on a bit of ground that juts out over the stream like a bluff, then clears some reeds and smooths a spot for me to join him. I drop to the damp ground, feeling the chill that has formed in the air, now that the sun has fallen low behind the distant hills. I brought you this. He pulls an orange from his pocket. I have not seen miraculous fruit like this since before the war. Thank you, I say graciously. How had he gotten it? Because of his father's position as mayor, a position that hurts others. I hand back the tainted fruit. I can't accept it, though. As I hand the orange to him, I notice that his index finger is bent at a crooked angle, somehow deformed. He puts the orange back in his pocket, his face crestfallen. Then he holds out something else wrapped in brown paper. Take this, then. I bought it with my ration cards, honestly.
I open it to reveal a piece of hard Cantal cheese between two slices of brown bread. I falter. Refusing food for myself is one thing. Extra sustenance for Theo, quite another. Thank you, I say, moved by his generosity and selflessness for me, a stranger. I rewrap the food and stick it in my pocket. A sound interrupts us from behind, the rumble of a truck growing louder on the road. I stand up hurriedly, not wanting to be seen. I have to go, I say, panicking at the questions that will arise if I am seen with Luke. But he takes my hand, stopping me. Come. He leads me swiftly back into the woods, following a path that shoots off in a different direction. We slow as we reach a clearing, and he looks around. All clear, he says. Still my heart races, and I am reminded of every reason I should stay away. Those police who came to the show to arrest the man and the girl, they work for your father, don't they?
Yes.
He lowers his head.
I am so sorry. I had no idea that was going to happen. I'm sure it was ordered from somewhere much higher up. He must not have had a choice.
There is always a choice. He keeps his eyes low, not meeting my gaze.
If you don't want to see me now because of everything that happened, I understand.
Not at all, I reply, too quickly.
Then come.
My fingers warm to his touch, as he takes my hand once more and continues to walk. Soon the forest ends, and across an open field, a barn appears, darkly silhouetted against the dusky sky. Luke starts toward the barn.
Luke, wait,
I say uneasily, as we near the door of the barn. Going for a walk together is one thing, but going inside with him seems like something more, a step too far. I have to get back, I say. I imagine Astrid, knowing exactly where I am, watching the clock angrily.
Just for a few minutes, so we are out of sight,
he cajoles. The wood door creaks as Luke pulls it open. He steps aside, gesturing for me to enter first. Inside, the barn is empty, the air thick with the smell of rotting wood and damp hay.
How did you find this place? I ask.
This is the very edge of my family's property. Don't worry, he adds, seeing my alarmed expression. No one ever comes out here anymore but me.
He gestures upward toward the loft.
No one will find us here.
I look up, dubiously, suddenly mindful that it is just the two of us alone, far from the circus or anywhere else.
I don't know.
We're just talking, he says, his voice challenging.
What harm can that do?
Luke climbs up to the loft then, and helps me, fingers moist on my wrist. It is a small rectangular area, maybe 2 meters by 3, close to the sloped A-frame roof of the barn. Rough wood boards are covered in hay that tickles my legs beneath my skirt. Luke slides back a slatted wood window panel to reveal the rolling hills that lead to the village, patchwork fields broken by mossy farmhouse roofs. Lights sparkle in some of the windows before blackout curtains fall, seeming to snuff them out like candles. It is peaceful, and so pristine, it is almost possible for a moment to forget about the war. Luke points out at a small steeple on the horizon, silhouetted against the setting sun.
I went to École there, he says,
and I smile, picturing him as a young boy. He had lived his whole life right in this village, much as I might have back home had things been different. He goes on.
I have 2 older sisters, both married and living in towns not far away.
My grandparents lived with us too when I was a child. There was always so much laughter and noise. There is a longing note to his voice that makes clear those times are far gone. He reaches under a pile of hay and produces a darkened glass bottle, half empty. "A bit of Chablis from my father's cellar," he says, grinning wickedly. He passes it to me, and I take a sip from the bottle. Though I know nothing about wine, I can tell that it is a good vintage, the taste layered, spicy, and deep. In the corner where we had hidden the wine, I notice something still half hidden behind the hay. Curious, I move closer. There is a thick tablet and a set of paints. "You're an artist," I remark. He laughs, wrapping his arms around his knees.
"That's a big world for it. I sketch when I can get paper. I paint, though not so much anymore. My mother loved art and was forever taking me to galleries whenever we went on holiday. Once I wanted to go to Paris and study at the Sorbonne."
His eyes are animated as he speaks of art and his childhood. "Is it far?" "Paris, I mean." I am embarrassed not to have a better sense of geography.
"About 4 hours by train these days with all of the stoppages. I went with my mother to see the museums. She loved art."
There is a note of sadness to his voice now. "You still live with your parents?" I ask.
"Just my father. My mother died when I was 11.
"I'm sorry," I say. Though my own parents are still alive, his loss seems to echo my own, strengthening the ache I have worked so hard to bury. I want to touch his arm in comfort, but it seems I do not know him well enough. "Do you still plan to study art?" I ask instead.
"It doesn't seem possible anymore."
He gestures to the countryside below, with long tapered fingers. "But you still want it," I press.
"Painting seems so frivolous now," he replies. "I don't know what to do. I don't want to just sit here. Papa wants me to join the LVF, but I don't want to fight for the Germans. He says it doesn't look right for the male son not to go, and I can only hold him off for so long. I'd run away, but I don't want to leave Papa alone."
"There has to be another way," I offer, though I am not sure I believe it.
"It's just this damned war," he says, his voice rattling with frustration.
I am surprised to hear him swear.
"It's turned everything on its head."
He turns away.
"What happened at the show the other day, with the man and the girl, it isn't the first time. There were Jewish families in tears who had been here my whole life. They lived over on the east side of town, just past the market. One of the boys, Marcel, was a friend of mine at Ecole."
"Your father, he orders the police to round them up?" I ask.
"No!"
he snaps, then quickly recovers.
"My father follows orders. He maintains a pretense of support in order to protect the village."
"And to protect himself," I blurt out, unable to hold back.
"How can you stand it?" "Really, he isn't like that," Luke continues,
calmer now, his voice pleading.
"Papa was different before my mother died. He once gave a family a house for an entire year, rent-free."
Luke needs to believe that his father is a good man, and he is asking me to believe it too. I had done the same. After my own father had kicked me out, I still remembered the mornings when we'd walk into town for fresh bread, just the two of us, him whistling as we went. He had bought me an extra croissant. I was still that girl, though. What had changed? Luke continues.
I begged my father to at least help Marcel's family, but he said there was nothing to be done.
His words pour out in a tumble, as though he has not until this very moment been able to share with another the things that he has seen. It's hard when the people we love do awful things, I offer. We both sit silently then, the now dark sky causing the light in the loft to dim. I notice that his jaw is square and strong, a faint late-day stubble pressing through.
Where are you from?
He asks, changing the subject. I shift uneasily. Until now, I have managed not to say much about myself.
The Dutch coast? Our village was so close to the sea you could walk down to the end of the road and catch your dinner.
It seems so strange to be talking about the life I'd lost. I want to tell him everything, about how my parents cast me out, and how I found Theo. But of course I cannot.
Why did you leave?
Luke asks abruptly. No matter how many times I am asked that question, I am still ill-prepared to answer it. My father was very cruel. So when my mother died, I took my brother and fled, I say, repeating the now familiar tale. I am not ready to tell him the truth.
It's hard not having your mother,
he says, looking deeply into my eyes. I hate myself for the lies I've told, but right now, even though my mother is not dead, losing her feels more real and painful than ever.
And then you joined the circus?
He asks. Yes, just a few months ago. I pray he will not ask about the time between.
It's remarkable that you learned to do all of those tricks so quickly.
His voice is full with admiration and wonder. Astrid trained me, I say.
That angry older woman?
I struggle not to laugh at his perception of Astrid. At the same time, I am defensive of an outsider criticizing her.
She's amazing, I say.
She didn't perform at the show, Luke notes. But I don't reply. I can't tell him the rest of the story, why Astrid is angry with me, without revealing to him the fact that she is a Jew.
Perhaps she's jealous that you were in the show and she wasn't,
Luke ventures. I laugh aloud.
Astrid? Jealous of me? That isn't possible.
Astrid is talented, famous, powerful. But then I see myself through her eyes. A younger woman, with the child fate had denied her, performing when she cannot. Maybe the idea is not so ridiculous after all.
It isn't like that, I add.
Astrid is a famous aerialist. She's just very intense. Peter says she's a danger to herself, I add.
Peter? He's the clown? Luke asks.
I nod. He and Astrid are together.
He sure didn't like me,
Luke says with a half-smile. He's very protective of Astrid, I explain. She thinks it's just for company, but she can't see the depth of his feelings for her. He watches me intensely.
I can imagine.
I look away, feeling myself blush. The show? You never told me what you thought. I brace myself for the criticism that would surely crush me.
You looked beautiful,
he offers, and I blush.
You were amazing.
He pauses for a moment, then adds,
it's just that I was sad for you.
Sad? My happiness fades.
Doesn't it bother you?
He asks.
All of those people, watching, I mean?
His tone is one of concern, but there is pity, too. You don't have to do it, you know, he adds. I can't explain that in the spotlight, I am someone else. Still, how dare he judge us? I found something I'm good at, I say defensively, crossing my arms. A way to take care of myself and Theo. Not that you would understand. Suddenly being alone with him and all of the lies between us are too much. I have to go, I say abruptly. I stand so quickly I lose my balance, nearly tumbling from the loft. Wait! Luke grabs my leg to steady me, his arm warm through the fabric of my dress. I look down. Though it is not nearly as high as the trapeze, there is no net, and I am paralyzed with fright. What am I doing here? Luke draws me down to the hay once more, closer now. He places a hand against my cheek. Noah, he says gently. Our faces are inches apart, his breath warm on my upper lip. Waves of confusion swirl around me. He likes me. I know that now. I cannot pull away. Luke kisses me. For a second, I stiffen. I should say no for a dozen reasons. It is impertinent of him, presumptuous and too soon. Astrid would say I should not be here with him at all. But his lips are tender and sweet with wine. His warm fingers cup my cheek, seeming to lift me from the ground. Our breath mingles. For a moment, I am just a carefree young girl again. I move closer, pushing the past firmly aside as I fall into him. When Luke pulls back, he is breathless, and I wonder if it is his first real kiss. He reaches for me again, eager for more. But I put my hand on his chest, stopping him. Why me? I ask bluntly. You're different, Noah. I've lived in this village my whole life with the same people, the same girls. You make me see the world in a new way. We won't be here for that long, I protest. And then we'll move on. To the next town. No matter how much we like one another, I am leaving, and there is nothing to be done. We have only now. I don't want to go, I blurt, embarrassed to feel my eyes burn. I've lost so much before. My parents, a child. Luke, a boy I hardly know, should not matter at all. You don't have to, he says, drawing me close. We could run away together. I tilt my head upward. Surely I've heard him wrong. That's madness. We've only just met. He nods firmly. You want to leave? So do I. We could help each other. Where would we go? To the south of France, he replies. Nice, maybe, or Marseille. I shake my head, remembering Astrid's tale of her family and their failure to outrun the Reich. Not good enough. We would have to go farther south, across the Pyrenees through Spain. We. I stop. Hearing the word that has slipped from my mouth without realizing it. Of course, it's impossible. A delightful fairy tale, like one I would spin for Theo to soothe him to sleep. Children playing make-believe. I had always planned to take Theo and go. But now the idea of leaving is hard to imagine. I have to go with the circus to the next town. I owe them that much. I'll find you, he promises gamely, as if the miles and borders are irrelevant. You don't even know where we are going, I protest. In the distance,
The cathedral bells toll. I listen, alarmed. 9 chimes. How had it gotten so late? I have to go, I say, pulling away reluctantly. He follows me down the ladder and from the barn. Neither of us speaks as we make our way back through the woods. It is after curfew, and in the distance the town is shuttered and still. At the edge of the circus grounds behind the train, I stop. I do not want anyone to see me with Luke so late at night. I should go alone from here.
When will I see you again?
He presses. I don't know, I say, and his face falls. I want to, I add hurriedly. It's just so hard to get away.
We don't have that much time. Can you meet me tomorrow night, after the show?
Maybe, I say, unsure how I will manage it. I'll try, but if I can't, if only there were a way to send word. I have no way to reach him. I scan the fairgrounds, thinking. My eyes stop at the back of the train. Each carriage has a box underneath, I recall. The belly box. On some of the cars, the workers use it for keeping tools handy. I pull out the one beneath the sleeper car. It is empty. Here, I say. If I can't get away, I will leave you a message. A secret mailbox that no one else knows. Tomorrow, then. He kisses me boldly, then steals away, glancing around carefully to make sure no one is watching. I race back to the campsite, breathless. There is an excitement with Luke that I've never felt before. It had not been like this with the soldier. I see now how the German had taken advantage of me, and taken a piece of my youth I will never recover. With Luke, though, the past feels like a bad dream that never happened. Is that even possible? I had not understood how Astrid could ever love again after her husband had cast her out. Now it seems that I might have a second chance, too. Suddenly, everything that has happened to me seems to make sense. I used to imagine that the German had never come. But if that had been the case, I would never have known Theo, or come here and met Luke. How I wish that I could talk to Astrid about it. In her rare, kinder moments, she is almost like a big sister, and I just know she could help me make sense of it all. She will never see past Luke's father, though, to who he really is. As I reach the door to the train car, Elsie appears. Her face is pale and creased with worry.
Thank goodness you're here!
Still annoyed at her letting him too near the animals, I push past her into the train car. But the place where Theo usually sleeps beside me is empty once more, and Astrid nowhere to be found. My blood runs cold.
What is it? What's wrong? It's Theo! He's sick, and he needs help.
Chapter 15. Noah. Elsie starts down the length of the train corridor, and I follow close behind.
What happened? I ask.
She stops at the door to a carriage near the front of the train, where I've never been. The sick car, they call it. It provides care to those who are ill and prevents disease from spreading to the rest of the circus, Astrid had explained once. An antiseptic smell fills the air. From inside come coughs and moans. Theo could catch worse than what he already has in there. His wail cuts sharply through the other sounds. I start forward.
He can't stay here. I'm taking him with me.
Timid Elsie will not stop me. But Berta, the woman in charge of the sick car, appears in front of us, her immense girth blocking my way.
You can't come in here,
she informs me. Theo's sick, I protest. He needs me.
Herr Newhoff's rules. No healthy performers allowed in the sick bay.